This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter, and with me, the return, Jenny Screen. Welcome back.
Hi, guys. It's been a while between drinks, hasn't it?
It has been a while, and Coops, you're in with us as well.
Yep, excited for this one.
Excellent. So what have you been up to, Jenny? Just a year off work?
Yeah, just a year off, you know. Just thought I'd push a child out and give birth to a little girl, and now she's almost a year old, and here I am back at All Good Things BV.
Excellent. And how's it all going? Enjoying motherhood, I'm assuming?
Shout out to all the parents in the world. Yeah, it has blown my mind in terms of everything remotely related to either giving birth to a child or raising a child. I definitely have met my maker. Let's put it that way.
Very good. Coops went full bobblehead there. Just agreed with everything you said.
Yeah, some PTSD just like come flooding back.
Look, a really simple one for us today. We did this a while ago before Christmas. It was just a really simple would you rather. So we have had it alluded to us every now and again by some of the listeners out there that we do agree on too many things, and it's like this is the only way
forward. Well, lucky I'm here because yeah, I tend to not agree with the masses, so hopefully I can,
I agree with that, Rob.
Yeah.
Well, this has started I'll be the super, outlier if yeah, you like.
This has started super well. So, like, as an example, Coots, we'd say Family Guy or Simpsons. What's your preference?
Oh, Simpsons.
Simpsons?
By a mile, yeah.
Not even close. Yeah.
Neither.
Yeah. So, Jenny, we'd go for you like 7:30 report or Q&A?
Q&A.
Yeah. So, you're already seeing the polar opposites of what we have available to us in the coaching world. So, nothing too spectacular. Coops, we'll throw the first one and you obviously get right a reply on this one, Jenny. Would you rather take an individual training session with an athlete or a team training session?
Oh, wow.
Can I give his answer?
Oh, you know already?
No, yeah, my head I'm thinking what he would say, but yeah.
It would be team. I mean, I love working with individuals and obviously you get that time to spend and really hone in on what that athlete's needs are and build that relationship. But I guess just from a personal standpoint, the ability to impact more in one space, but then also I'm never going to be able to help myself in having fun, in preparing for the chess game and doing all the fun things that come with preparing a team. So I think it's team slightly over individual. Yep.
Jenny, what about you?
Oh, I'm normally not Switzerland. I'm going to go team because I love group dynamics and I love seeing things evolve and grow and change depending on, you know, situations and context. So team for me, but yeah, I also love the individual stuff.
Yep. Do you find you don't necessarily get the same connection with the athletes, I suppose, by doing team? Like individual, you get to have a little bit of banter back with them, forward, you have sort of conversation. You kind of miss that out, I suppose, when you're doing the team stuff. Like, is that a thing or not?
I believe so, yeah. Because in individual stuff, you can really hone down on the nitty gritty. You can spend time on the detail, whereas that probably falls to the wayside in a team concept training session and focus because obviously there's an end point or you're trying to get to it. Whereas I think an individual, yes, while you're getting to an end point, you're growing all facets of where they're at in their basketball. So, yeah, there's definitely that fun part, but I still think you get the fun part with team as well because you've got more personalities that can add to that.
Yeah, definitely. Calls for more time spent outside of practice to build those relationships. So it's probably more demanding in that sense that you've got to go and do that work to build your individual relationships that you can have that same impact in a team environment. But if you're talking about like maybe VJBL level, you're not necessarily going to be able to do that. So I think Jenny's right on the money there. Yeah,
very true. So obviously some of these you both came round to the same one. Like it's not even, some of
you
these
started are, light though, Rob.
Yeah,
you
no,
started
no, yeah. Light. Some of these are a little tongue in cheek, but you know, so coaching in a polo shirt. Tucked,
oh, I hate polos.
Tucked or untucked?
I'm a tucker. I'm a tucker inner and I'm Harry High Pants and I'm proud of it. And definitely a tucker in a row. But I hate polos. I'm going to put it out there. I think they're the worst thing on the history
of
the planet.
So what would you coach in then?
A nice fitted college, not even a college shirt, just a nice fitting complimentary top for a female.
Yep. That is, it's a fair point. Like females to males are obviously different in this space. Coops, what about you?
Yeah, tucked all the way. Shout out to Bestie for his untucked performance at the recent under-20s. Every time he came in untucked. It was just driving me mental and my OCD. So that was a killer. But yeah, like, tuck it in, coaches. Come on, let's look a little neat and casual on the sidelines. But I couldn't agree more that polos suck.
They do.
And that's my nice way of putting it, my podcast PG way of putting it. Put us in a nice shirt, a collared shirt, something like that. Like, let's lift our game on the sidelines.
See, you've gone formal wear for me. Yeah. I can't handle that. Like, give me a t-shirt, thongs and a hat and a hoodie and I'm cool. Like, I'm good with that.
Yeah, no, I don't know. There's something to
be
said.
Does it depend on the level? Like, does it depend on the
no,
level?
No, because,
like,
then in the NBA, they're not even wearing, a lot of teams don't even wear suits anymore. They're rocking up in their sweats. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's something to be said about a coach on the sideline that looks respectable. And Joey Wright always did that. Kerry Graff. Graffy was always big on her attire. And Sandy Brondello does that. She even has an assistant that sets her up for the season in terms of what she wears. So I think that's fabulous in itself.
My assistant would have the easiest job in the world. Like, hey, wear this hoodie. Like, the
this hoodie, this cap.
Yeah. It'd be the shoes too.
It'd
come
be
on.
The shoes. No, look, to be fair, the shoes does take a little more work, but that's okay. So, Coops, flop or stay on your feet and not get the call? So, flop and get the call or stay on your feet and not get the call?
I've got to be true to my playing self. So, flop. If they walked in, it's 100% flop. It's 100% go down, sell it, as I'm going down. winning the Academy Award and putting it on the ref and being like, if I'm going to take a hit like that, I'm taking one. I'm not taking multiple.
Fair. I like it. Jenny?
I would probably go with that one too, because you got to sell the story. But the flop has to, I believe, be representative of the actual hit.
Yeah, not like a house of cards. Where
no, we're not just collapsing to the ground. There actually has to be true force
collapsing
behind.
Collapsing in the opposite direction of the way you got hit.
Which happens quite a lot. I'm definitely with Coops on that one.
Yep, easy. Lose by one or lose by 40?
Lose by 40. Yeah. It's a lot easier to take. Losing by one is heartbreaking, I think. Especially in those big games that mean something. It is just, when it's by 40, like, we were just awful
didn't
in all categories. But it could come down to one missed foul shot, one timeout you didn't call, a certain play, a turnover, and it's just, it eats away at you. And I'm sure both of you, or all of us, could, you know, recall a moment that probably still eats away. But yeah, for me, it's definitely lose by 40.
Yep. Coops?
Most of our listeners would know, Rob, that I'm coming off two recent NBL 1 seasons of a lot of losing by 40. And so losing by one all the way for
you
me.
Take that through? Yeah.
100%. I could look my team in the eye and say, hey, guys, we're getting better. It's closer. Like, let's build on this. But the multiple 40-point losses, they did their damage.
I can
to the hair.
Yes, the hairline, the hair strength, the hair colour. It's not where it used to be.
I get it. Best offense in the league or best defense in the league?
Oh, offense.
opposites with this
I
one.
I love this. We both, it's just like no breath between like staying that offense.
Defense.
Yeah.
Yep. Why? What would you have?
I could easily say that the aim of the game is to put the ball in the hole. I just
shooting is the master skill.
Shooting is the master skill. I just play all my podcast hits right now. Run the reel back. I love the fluidity of offense. I love the chemistry. I love the way offenses have become more complex while still valuing the simple aspects like false motion play after the play. There's just all this wonderful tapestry that you know comes together to potentially make your offense the best offense that it can be. And I love, you know, sketching out plays and watching the Euro League and how does that work and how could that work with my teams and all those sorts of things. It's real fun.
What about you, Jenny? Why the defense?
Because I think it comes from maybe you can't stop me, you can't guard, and I just like, well, I will. So I love the defense side of thing for the same reasons you love the offense. Is I love trying to stop you do the things that you want to do, and then I want to know what you're going to do when I shut that down. For me, that's why I think defense is so important, because I truly think it's one element of the game you can control and teach and get better at. And that's not to say you can't offensively, but sometimes you just have a bad night at the office when it comes to shooting and those type of things. You're not humming on the offensive end. And I would rather be driven on the defensive end and have the momentum from that to create our offense rather than relying on the offense to do that defensively. Yeah. But that's just,
I think that's a really good one for our youth coaches to listen to, Rob, around Jenny's passion, not just for defense, but talking about that want of disruption to be the proactive defender, be the proactive defensive coach and invest in your defense at youth level, at VJBL level, to have more fun with it and to show the value of it and create better defenders that we're looking for at both state and national level.
Yep, I like it. Bad shooting night. Some people have had bad shooting careers. Like I'm one of them. Like if you don't defend, you don't play. It's a really simple one on that end. Pre-game nap.
Always, 100%.
Always?
Yep. I am a siesta from way back, I think, from the 6 years in Italy playing. But, yeah, I'm not the type of person, if it's a morning game, I'm going to wake up. I think Steph Reed said recently on before a WNBA game, if she's got an 11A game, she will wake up and go back to bed. I'm like, I can't do that. But if it's an afternoon game, night game, yeah, I'm definitely a get up, go for a walk or have breakfast, walk, and then go back to bed. Yep. And, yeah, that's always been me. Definitely sleep.
Yep. Even now as a coach?
No, probably not as a coach, unless I'm truly, well, you're probably exhausted by the end of it.
At this stage. Yeah,
but I will take a sleep any time now, considering I have an 11-month-old.
I was going to say, motherhood has changed Jenny significantly here. Like she's looking for any avenue to try
even
and get a couple
of... Even at a red light, I will have a sleep.
Micro naps all the way.
You heard us on the horn before. Coos, what about you?
Yeah, I was a nap guy back in the day. Yep. Really enjoyed that. Putting some music on, just laying in bed, not even sure whether I was going to fall asleep or not, and then all of a sudden my alarm waking me up and being like, okay, cool, it's game time. But just always felt more rested, always felt more connected. And then even now as a coach, it's obviously it's heavily dependent on the schedule and the time pressure, but it's sometimes, especially if it's, you know, a Worlds or a Nationals and you've had like two really big days in a row, maybe had a double day or whatever it may be, and it's just like scanning report into film and then scanning report into film, and just that moment of like a 15-minute power nap just to let your brain just take a breath, I think is really valuable. Yep.
Can I jump in here about this one? Brush your teeth before a game?
Yes. Okay. Good. Yep.
Good.
Yeah.
people go, really? You do that? I'm like, yeah, I always did. Oh, always brush my teeth.
Shower? Had to have a shower?
Yeah.
And brush with like, it was like I was getting ready to go out, like deodorant, shower, brush teeth. Like I wanted to feel good knowing that that connected. Like if I felt good, I was going to play good.
Yeah. What was the music, Coops?
There's a lot of Beastie Boys back in the day. what else made in? Some De La Soul. What else is there? Tribe Called Quest.
Here comes the DJ, Coops, that not many people would know of. No, that's so right. That's cool. Yeah. You're giving a bit of insight.
But when I got into college, I started moving to more NXS, Hall & Oates. So I got into my...
Of course you did.
Come back the other way.
Yeah, that's it. Like, yeah.
Coops, you make many people's dreams come true. It's so tech free throws. Coops, are you choosing or are the players choosing?
That's a great question. It depends on the team. If I trust the team, you know, around all the things we build around our culture and understanding of role and so on, I'd be inclined to have them choose. If I was in that situation, I would choose. So I guess I probably haven't answered it.
I don't know.
I'm really just sitting on the fence.
Say you choose.
Yeah,
you
the dictator would. In me says it. I'll choose. Yeah,
we all
choose.
Knew what was coming here. Like, it's good that he got there in the end, but we knew he was choosing the free throw shooter here. What about you, Jenny?
I'm the other flip of the coin. I'm player choose, because I think, one, it should be known, I believe, on a team anyway, who the best shooter is. So it just should be an automatic selection. And secondly to that, I want the person to choose themselves because they want that responsibility to make or miss, not because I told them to. And the pressure of them going, oh my God, if I don't do this, like I'm failing and all that kind of stuff. And I think that can add to already the pressure of taking those, you know, it depends on the context of the game and the time of the game, but those foul shots in the first place. So definitely player driven.
What if you see the 10% free throw shooter walking to the line that is supremely confident?
Well, I would hope that my expectations and conversations with said player throughout the entirety of the season would make them realize that they wouldn't be walking to the foul line if they were that poor.
So what you just said there, Coops, is I would scream and rant and rave and make sure they're not shooting those free throws.
And be very upset if I hadn't beaten down my 10% free throw shooter to the point where they knew, do not walk to the free throw.
Well, they wouldn't be beaten down. I would have made them a better foul shooter by the end of the season.
Ah, yes, there it is.
Glass half full approach. Yes. I like what you've done there. Yes. Mm-hmm. I like what you've done there.
You're welcome.
Who am I on to? I think I'm on to you first, dear Jenny. Which one brings out the stronger emotion? The hatred of losing or the enjoyment of winning?
Can you repeat that again?
So the stronger emotion, like which one hits you more, hating to lose or enjoying to win?
Oh, definitely hating to lose. I think that comes from my father. He's the worst loser in the history of the planet. And I'll never forget when I beat him at chess when I was 11 years of age and he threw the board. And he threw the board and turned the lights on me, goes, go to bed, and slammed the door. And I was so excited that I beat my father. And then he came back in. Literally, I'd gone to bed, happy as Larry, came back in at about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning because he couldn't sleep because his 11-year-old daughter had beaten him at chess. And so he's like, we're playing, turned on the lights, get out of bed. And then he beat me because I was so tired and obviously sleeping because he didn't want to go to bed a loser. And that trait and DNA of my father has definitely infiltrated me. So I'm definitely, the hatred of losing.
I enjoy the stall gift, like handicap. It's like, I'm just going to come and get you after you've slept for a little bit, knowing you don't go back to sleep well or wake up fantastically. We're going to play again. Like, it's, yeah. I look forward to the podcast in, say, 10 or so years' time when Edie's jagged her first win in chess world.
Yes.
I was in the chess team, guys. There you go.
What a snapshot we just got.
Wasn't that? Like,
just unreal.
It's one of those moments where I wish I had like the Homer Simpson nerd like, little drop that I could throw in there or something. Like, were you a checkers player first?
No, chess. Just straight to chess. Grew up chess, yeah. I was on the chess team in primary school. Yeah. Went and competed.
Did you have like...
Yes, I had all the moves.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, because there's certain ways to play and tactics you can roll out. Like, you understood all those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not to the level of like the what was that? Netflix series, The Queen Gambit. Not her level, but for, you know, a 12-year-old, I thought I was pretty good.
But really weird tangent. I was reading something about chess the other day and it was a guy that plays similar with all the tactics and all that sort of stuff and understands it, but knows that the other person knows those tactics as well. So it would every now and again throw out something different so that they would stop playing the system, so to speak, and would actually having to start play the chess pieces in front of them.
Yeah.
Like the psychological warfare in chess is just chaotic. They play in the good time slots of like 6 p.m., not like 12:30, 1 o'clock.
100%.
Good. All right, Coops, what about you?
God, I've almost forgotten the question.
Hatred of losing or the enjoyment of winning?
Yeah, hatred of losing all the way. Like to the point where I think through the obsession to do well and prepare to do well makes winning a relief rather than enjoyment.
Oh, wow. That's really – that's that. But it's also very – like when I think of myself saying the same answer as you, ego, I'm like, oh, that's very ego, isn't it, that I'm driven by hate, like – you know, no, but it is like the ego of myself rather than the enjoyment of winning. And if we lose, so be it. Like then you're kind of relinquishing to whatever may be. But we're very ego driven there, Coops, in terms of the hatred of losing.
Hence the stoicism, Screeny. That's
the working piece.
That's it.
The constant work.
Yeah, okay. That's right. The inner development, the acceptance for the things I cannot change.
Those 40-point losses?
That's it.
You've got to find a way, don't you? Exactly. Like it's funny because I had a coaching course on the weekend and I said that, like, I hate, same deal, I hate losing more than I actually enjoy winning. Mm. And every time I've dropped that in a course, everyone's like, oh, that's really strange. Like, we enjoy winning more and, you know, that's what drives us. I remember the first course ever of, like, the 22 people or so in the room, there was, like, 16 of them that said, yeah, we're the same. Like, we just hate losing so much that, you know, we probably don't really enjoy the win. Like, I'll be honest, I'm over a win in about 15 minutes. Like, it doesn't take much. Like, it's just like, cool.
But I think that's the high achieving or that you're striving for something more.
Yes.
That is the greatest compliment of all time. Jenny's just called us high achievers.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, when you win, it's like, yeah, I think we should celebrate it more and we don't because I don't know whether that's a reflection of us as a society and as a people, but yes, on to the next thing or, okay, well, how can we be better? Even though we won, there's got to be lessons in that and, you know, we can't enjoy the win just for the win and we can't celebrate too much because we don't want to offend the people that lost and, you know, it's a hard one.
Oh, yeah.
It's spot on. A lot. Yeah, it's spot on. We need to take more time in enjoying the small victories and catching ourselves and our athletes and the people around us doing doing something right, you know what I mean, and spending more time in the positive and not always, you know, searching for that drive. Like, we've got to get better in that balance. Yeah. I think it's really important.
Well, it's probably one of those areas too where it's not necessarily scoreboard driven. Like, some of the wins might be just the right footwork on a catch and shoot from a player that you've been trying to get right for weeks and months potentially, and they just they get it.
Yeah.
But then they come up my team defensively and they just shut
down. It's taken away. Like, it's why we taught them 15 different types of footwork, Jenny. There's always something. But it genuinely is. Like, and even a lot of the parent coaches out there that have been on their kids, like, dribble with your left hand. Like, get your eyes up. The first time that kid takes a left-hand dribble in, like, under 10s, it's like, oh, this is what I do this for. And then within about 3 minutes, you're like, no, this is why I get frustrated with this stuff. Like, but it's just what it is. Like, it's part of the coaching side of things. And, like, you know, there were games I lost last year on the Friday night, and I was still pissed on the Sunday morning, like, just angry about it. Like, it's just, it's a really horrible mindset to be in. Like, and I think I've said it a couple of times on this, like, the best I ever felt was after a loss was getting straight back on court the next morning for, like, one of the academy sessions with the country kids. That actually put me in a better headspace. Like, I'd forget about it, and you go back from the win and the loss into the skill development world. And it was actually just really healthy from that end, that I stopped worrying so much about the why did we miss that box out, and that's definitely not how we taught you to rotate and what happened here.
Process over outcome, right?
Oh, Coops, the soundbite right there. Like, but it's bang on. Like, and as coaches, we do forget about that a lot at times, and, you know, it turns out there's more to life than winning and losing. You know, said by a loser. No. it is one of those areas where I think as coaches we do have to get better at that. We do have to savor the win. And I mean, you hit on a really important point there, Jenny. Like, we don't want to over-celebrate because then we look like idiots and we're being disrespectful to the other team. And, like, it's one of those things that we see at, like, nationals. Like, teams that win the semi that just, like, over-celebrate and, like, this is huge. We get to a grand final game and then you lose the grand final. And it's that kind of thing. Like, at the end of the day, you've still won a silver, but you've kind of lost of silver.
That's all the way we look at it, right? Yeah. It is all the way we look at it. And I get that question all the time. Would you rather win lose a gold or win a bronze?
Yep.
Even though...
What's your answer?
The feeling of finishing a tournament on a bronze, like we did in 2012, compared to losing gold to the US in Beijing, the heartache of that was just horrendous. But then people are like, you won silver. And it's like, but we lost gold. Yeah. But I still think of it that way. Yep. And hopefully when I'm 80, I'll change my mind. But
I was going to say, does time help that? Like, do you look at it now and go, yeah, but it's so much cooler to have that silver than it would have been to have the bronze?
No, I just think any medal at an Olympics is phenomenal in its own right. Like, it, you know, you're a small percentage to even make an Olympic team, and then to even medal is even smaller. So I think any colour is fantastic and should be celebrated.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we're seeing probably a little bit more of that now with, like, the rose gold narrative and those types of things around it. I think we are starting to actually understand that it's not just about the little sort of small snapshot. Like, a medal is huge. And whether that be at a World Cup, whether that be at an Asia Cup, whether that be
national, championship.
National championships, like, over the course, like, that's still pretty big to be a top three team. Like, you've got to get a lot of luck to get, like, you can have the best team, just be unlucky and you don't get near it.
Yeah.
So it happens a lot. All right, you can only have one of these in your offense. Flare screens or down screens?
Flare screens.
I knew he'd say that. Yeah. He wants the shot. Yeah.
But also knowing that the flare slip is really hard to guard against the switch. And, you know, just with the amount of switching we're seeing around the world now, you know, continuing to grow, that, not only are we trying to get our shooters open, but we're countering against a popular defense. And also, it's I talk about this all the time, changing the geography of the offense. So coming uphill rather than downhill, a lot of things are run kind of down on the floor, and especially down at defenders who have vision on man and ball. But when you run in some action uphill, like a flare screen, when you're coming up behind somebody who doesn't necessarily have vision on you, can cause more problems that way.
Yep. Would you have answered the same way 10 years ago?
I think I would have, because just of a lack of that sort of knowledge of the game, just obviously through experience and research. So, yeah, I think I probably would have said down screen, knowing that I like down screens as a player and, you know, like the ability to come off a down screen and be able to, you know, shoot the ball and, and
catch
make plays.
Catch in 5 foot, square up.
Yeah, square up, pivot.
All who's use. Yeah. Like, it's just talking about that.
That's right.
Jenny, what would you prefer, flare screens or down screens?
I do like a flare screen for your last point in terms of catching a player off guard, you know, their positioning. You can really, really get someone that's not prepared for it. Whereas down screens, there's a little bit more preparation and time you have as a defender to negate or overcome that said screen. So, yeah, flares add a little bit more complexity.
Yep.
But you've got to have people that can pass the ball to a flare screen. That's the hard part.
The current under the river, you say. It's a valid point. Like, if you can't get the ball to where you want it to go, don't worry about it. We see a lot of teams working on screening action, but they lack the ability to pass the ball in the first place. Turns out fairly vital with our athletes going through. So, Jenny, we'll go back to you on this one. You can only have one of the two, of course.
Why?
Just the rules.
Okay.
Yep. On-ball screens or dribble handoffs?
On-ball screen.
On-ball screen?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd say that with an air of cautiousness.
No, on-ball screen.
Yep.
But then I just think of defense. But no, on-ball screen. On-ball screen. I just think as long as I've got a good player coming off the on-ball and someone that's setting a decent screen. But no, I think the ability to do things in that scenario, in that two-player kind of phase, attracts a lot more attention than a dribble handoff.
All right, I'll flip it for you though. Which would you rather defend?
Either.
That is like some confidence in her defensive ability, wasn't it?
Dribble handoff, I believe, is a lot easier to defend. Dribble handoff would be a lot easier, in my opinion, because you have a lot more control of how you can, I think, script how that works out as a defender in my head. But, yeah, pick and roll D is definitely hard. And an area that I don't think we spend enough time in as a state or a nation anymore in defending.
Yep. Okay.
And learning how to.
Oh, I haven't forgotten about your Coops. We'll keep going on this then. Pick one way to defend the on-ball screen.
I'm aggressive. I'm a hard show type of person. And I think because of that mentality of I'm going to stop you from doing something before you do it to me. I think that hard show and get over, go under the hard show is my keeper.
Yep.
That would be the way I'd defend an on-ball.
Would that change if it was wing or mid-pick?
Correct. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yep. Definitely change. Obviously, yeah, side would be more that kind of scenario. Mid would probably be more of a flat show. But again, obviously contextual who you're defending. Yep.
What you got.
But I think hard show, put them on the back foot straight up and let's see what happens.
One way to not defend the on-ball.
I think switching is just lazy, but I'm going to even say that drops just drives me insane. That is just...
Does it matter if it's drops are over or drops are under? Like drops regardless?
Just drops regardless.
Yep.
I think it creates a mentality of laziness. And then you're just dealing with someone coming at you with speed potentially. I'm just not a fan of drops.
Yep.
Sorry. Sorry to all the drops people out there.
Apologise to me. I have no horse in this race. Coops, if you could only have one in your offense, dribble handoff or on ball?
If I had the shooting, I'd say dribble handoff, but I would agree and say the ball screen. Just knowing that there's more variety and ways to be effective, I think, from both the ball handler and the screen setter through ball screen action rather than the DHO. But I think if you get two really good shooters in the DHO action, that can be obviously a real test and defend, and that's why you see more DHOs in the NBA and so on. So, but I'm with Screeny on that, especially when we're talking about kind of the level of most of our listeners, that the ball screen gives you a little bit more variety to execute.
Yep. Defensively?
Jam and under.
Really?
Yeah, that's my go-to.
Just playing in the lack of shooters out there, is that what this is?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Like how many shooters do you know? And again, like let's talk about a Nationals that can shoot 40%+ off the bounce behind three defenders at 25 feet from the rim. You know, and how many coaches are going to be comfortable with that athlete taking that shot more often than not as their best look? Also comes from a place of coaching a lot of teams that don't have size. So if we can jam the roller and take away, you know, their ability to cause paint pressure or give vertical spacing, promote them to shoot long shots off the bounce and then us to potentially stay out of rotations behind, I think that's, you know, one of the best defenses for, you know, kind of NBL one going down. If I was above that, I would switch. just because I feel like we haven't had enough tension yet on the pod, so I'm just going to get into that. But
I do have a glass bottle here that I can throw at any point.
I'm just testing my wheelie chair, seeing how quickly I can move laterally right now. No, I like an aggressive rap switch. You know, the switching angle is basically the same angle as the hard show, you know, to cause that disruption. So, you know, the ball handler can't turn the corner, rap switch over the top, you know, helps to not get rejected, helps you be a little bit more physical and disruptive on the roll in terms of having them throw higher and further on the lob. And then add to that would be aggressive scram switching off the back of that too.
Okay, so someone's 3 of 3 from behind the 3-point line and you've gone jam and under. At what point are you changing? Are you changing on the next one or are you going to roll the dice a little bit?
So 3 possessions in a row?
Yeah, sure.
And everything's been off the bounce and at roughly their range? Yep.
He's asking questions like we don't know the answer to this. Yeah, he's going to run on the court and try and tackle
that. If you tell me you're going to stick in it, then I'm going to definitely throw my glass bottle at you.
I would say it depends.
Ah, brilliant.
Hello, Switzerland.
We'd have the first thing I'd want to be looking at is how high we were jamming the screen. And if I felt like we had control to be pushing that screen higher and that shooter kind of out of their range, then I would potentially stick with it and say, hey, you know, we've got to make that adjustment. If it was more for the fact that this is just one of those guys, yeah, we're out of that thing.
I like that you've given up somewhere along the way. That's a good way to have it. So you need to win the game. Pick your margin. I don't really care what the margin is. Would you rather have a baseline out of bounds or a sideline out of bounds?
Wow, that's really good.
Every now and again, I'll put some work into this podcast, Coops, and this is one of those times where I've come up with a great question for you.
God,
how long's left on the clock?
Yeah.
I'll give you 8 seconds.
Oh, okay.
Eight seconds.
Yeah, so it's enough time.
2 or 3?
You're down by one.
Down by one?
Yeah.
8 seconds? Cool. I think if it's 2 or under, I like the baseline in the fact that we're probably going for a 2. Again, a unique way to have to defend and we're closer to the rim. And shorter clock. If it's longer clock and I need a 3, I'd prefer the space of the sideline out of bounds and more access to the 3-point line to tie the game.
Yep. I like it. No worries. Jenny, what would you rather?
Oh, I don't know. Defensively, I think it's a lot harder to defend baseline out of bounds.
Just weird angle.
Yeah. Obviously, you know, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. There's a lot of moving pieces going on. Whereas when it's sideline, you can almost push away from the bucket deal with what comes.
It's sort of like a half court set too.
Correct.
Like you kind of lined up as you would.
You're a little bit more in control, I believe. So from that perspective, you know, I don't know. I would say baseline out of bounds. Just from a creative standpoint, you can always, if it doesn't come off, you're not getting a catch and shoot or, you know, getting someone on a flare screen or whatever, then you've got that potential last couple of seconds to make something happen. So I'm just gonna go baseline.
Yep. I think there's more cool stuff you can do off the baseline too.
Yeah, and depending on you've got a 6'8" center and get some, you know, small to big screens.
Oh, this is all hypothetical. You can have whatever you want. If you want a team of 6'2" giants, you can have whatever you want on that one. No problem at all. But I agree. I mean, your point is really valid, I think, is that you're kind of in a weird situation defensively. Like the ball's coming from an angle that you're not normally coming from, whereas the sideline...
And the ring's right there.
Yeah.
So I think you're already under the pump,
yep.
you know, yep. Whereas, yeah, the control defensively from the sideline is a lot easier because you can just... you know, sometimes be able to push away and have the space to then reset and go again.
Yep.
But anyway, baseline.
Yep. Up by 3.
Mm.
Other team's ball. They've advanced it. Would you go man or zone?
Man.
Because yep. Any particular reason?
Because I believe that we have, as a team, done enough and scouted the right way to fall back onto what we're good at, and that's our man defense.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think you could go to zone, but it's always the way, right? You go to zone for that one possession and they hit the 3, and it's just always the way. I don't know why.
Yep.
But, yeah, for me, man.
Yep. Coops?
A lot of it depends, but
it is. A lot of it depends.
Of course, it is.
We could argue that, but yeah.
But face value, man. Yep, absolutely, man. You know, we're feeling more comfortable in exactly what Jenny's saying is we're feeling more comfortable in matchups, feeling more comfortable in scout, feeling more comfortable in our rules around defending concepts and being able to stay attached to shooters rather than zone where we're guarding a space and, you know, a lot of decision making and potential confusion around
you got or I got, you know, whose space is this space. Yeah.
And the risk you run, obviously, up by three. So the only thing you don't want them to do is stick the three ball. The danger, I suppose, by going in man is someone gets a little bit antsy, gets blown by, they're on the rim, they give up a foul, there's the 3-point play. That's the risk you run, though, I feel like. Like, it's if you're explicit with your players, look, just don't give up the three. Like, play high side of this, don't allow anything, like anything at the rim, no worries, take the layup. We'll deal with what we deal with out of that. But, yeah, I don't love the idea of a zone. Like, it just worries me.
Well, I don't think in a season that often that you practice it enough to feel really confident.
Yep, very fair.
So why would you do it in a situation that you're in control in? I just, you know, yeah, you could to be different and go, oh, stuff it, we'll just have a crack. But, you know, if it's the first or second quarter, third quarter, maybe fourth quarter and the game's on the line, I'm not doing it.
And also just language around the fouling piece of that is that, look, if you do get blown by, we're still up three, just lay it up. You don't need to foul. You don't need to try and block the shot.
We've all been in this situation where we say we don't need to foul, like you don't have to foul, and you know someone's taken like a 2-foot running jump at that thing and trying
and
to
the ref's
it in
there
a
waiting.
Exactly.
I tried to cut all my robs earlier than that, so they're not in that situation.
We get in everywhere, I can tell you. Like, just when you think we're out, we get dragged back in. 22 seconds to go. You're down by a point. Ball in the backcourt. You have a timeout. Would you advance it or would you stay in the backcourt?
22 seconds. Down by one.
Down by one.
I'm keeping in the backcourt.
Keeping in the backcourt. Yep. So you want the last possession, I think?
I want the last possession. I like the room. I like the room of the backcourt. I like the ability to potentially catch at speed or just open the floor up. I just think you have a little bit more variety, you have a little bit more space. The clock, you control the clock. Yeah. So it's in your benefit.
Yep. Jenny?
I'm the same. Yep. Yeah, that time frame, that score line, I prefer exactly. There's no need to say anymore. I just say backcourt.
Well, I'll move on to the next question then, Jenny. So timeout, squat. Stand or chair?
No, I'm a squat.
Yep.
Well, if they need an attitude adjustment, they can stand up and we can stand up. I'm sure that would happen at some point. Yep. But no, I'm not a fan of the chair. Yep. I just, I don't know. I'm definitely a squat person.
Yep. Coops?
I used to be the same. I used to be anti chair, and I was like, I just got and now the knees are going.
Anti chair agenda.
The so back's that's just going. A sign you need to just go back to the gym and get stronger.
Okay,
it's a very skin tight top he's got on at the moment.
I have been lifting quite frequently, Rob, so I'm feeling really dejected right now that Jenny's not seeing the fruits of the labor of the amount that I've been spending in the gym. So I'm going to cut the pod short and just head down Anytime Fitness, our BV sponsor. So
you've done well there.
excuse me. I also like the chairs bringing me eye level. The chairs easier for me to draw on. It's just some simple things like
that's
that.
That's just a preference thing. Do you get your own chair or do you make one of the assistants get it for
you? No, I'll always get my own chair. If the assistant gets it for me, thank you. And I'll try and say thank you every time, but I'm not, you're not bringing me my whiteboard, bringing me my drink bowl, bringing me my chair. I can be a dictator in other places.
I like the way you added on tater on the end of that. So with that, what do you expect your assistant coach to bring? Like, do you want them to hand you the whiteboard still? Like, is that something that you would have there or are you getting your own?
No, I like them. I like them to have their own whiteboard, their own text, their own eraser, to have something to write down on, and whatever that is. Like, we can have some conversations about that. Like, I've in the past used some different scouting templates that I've produced in different roles as an assistant that I've given to assistants and said, hey, you know, you might want to use this. You can edit it to whatever it may be. Some, if we have the luxury of a third assistant, maybe we're talking about statting some things. And so obviously that's going to be a focus there, but overall they'll have their role. They have their understanding. Usually my first assistant, excuse me, like an associate head coach, they're my go-to. I'll have them noting things down that I want to come back to me potentially in the next break or whatever it may be. So they're usually pretty focused on that. But I, like when I'm assistant coaching, I'm like, if people watch me, like I'm out of my chair and I'm down the bench like every second possession, like with my whiteboard, with my pen, you know, barking instructions, you know, trying to relate what's happening on the floor to what they're thinking or maybe their role going onto the floor. And I just think there's real value in teaching and coaching the game while the athletes are sitting there on the sideline, that you don't need to be down the end of the bench in this little coach click, like get up and down, get off your ass and just coach the heck out of them. And that's my expectation with my assistant.
Get off your ass, as he says he wants a chair.
Yeah.
Like it. That's all right, Coots. We're still good. Your team is up by a point. The other team is on the foul line. We've got 3 seconds to go. Are you calling the timeout to ice the free throw shooter or not?
Oh. There you go.
It's you.
Okay, sorry. Go again.
So your team is up by a point.
Yep.
The other team is on the foul line.
Yep.
3 seconds to go.
Yep.
Would you call a timeout to try and ice the free throw shooter and put it in their head, or are you letting it go?
Do I have another timeout?
Sure, you have two.
If I have two, yep, I would definitely think about it. I'd be thinking about, yep, I'd ice them, talk about the next possession, talk about if he makes it, you know, we'll call another one. If he misses, yeah, this is what we're doing with our 3 seconds, or, you know, make sure you protect it. They're probably going to foul, those sorts of things. So if I had the extra timeout up my sleeve, I would. 3 seconds, and I didn't. No, I like hoarding my timeouts. I think, yep, I'd keep it. Yeah.
No, I like it.
Did you not just say you would?
If I had two timeouts.
Oh, if you had two.
Yeah. If you had two, okay, he would. If, yeah, you had one, he wouldn't. What about you, Jenny?
No, just let him shoot it. I'm too nice.
Far too nice. Yeah. No mind games, just getting their head.
No,
and like nothing.
I don't know.
Like,
they're probably already nervous as it is. Like, yeah, they'll be all right.
And like Scottie Pippen's walk past, you know, the mailman doesn't deliver on Sundays or anything like that. Like, nothing.
No.
Yeah, nice coach.
I know,
nice coach.
Sorry.
All right, Jenny. Would you rather have the super good athlete with low IQ or the super high IQ athlete that has really poor athleticism?
Unconscious bias would just tell me that I would pick the latter.
Yep.
Yeah, because I think I prefer players that can blueprint the game 2 passes ahead, and therefore go said athleticism by beating them. There's the chess game coming back,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so, and there are many a player that have been very successful at doing that. So, yeah, I'm tipping Coops is going to go with the athlete.
No. Oh, really? Yeah, no, okay. The other way. Yeah, okay. Yeah, risk versus reward is that I think – especially if you back yourself as a coach, like what you're talking about, that we can make up for the lack of athleticism through the shared high IQ and we'll find other ways, you know, to be creative and be effective. Whereas with the athlete, it's like, okay, well, if they're on one game, great. But then the other 3 games, you know,
nine.
Yeah, it's, it can be pretty
tough. I
think
we've seen it though. Like over the course of like many of the pro leagues and NBL, WNBL and all that sort of stuff, there's always been a place for the super high IQ people.
Yeah.
Like, but there's not always a place for the super athlete.
They get found out.
That's where I think 3-on-3 is kind of more valuable for that space, because you can dominate in the athletic category and not really relying too much on the X's and O's of it. There's less, you know, obviously easy, less people.
That's a really good point, actually. I like that. Coops, what drives you more crazy? I could just end it there, to be honest. Like, yeah, I don't even need to go any further. A missed closeout or a missed box out?
Miss box out.
Yep.
Because I think you're just in more control of that particular scenario. I think it's tough because that's a really good question.
Are you teaching them how to box out?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yep.
It's going to be called a foul on the box out. I only just saw that message actually that you threw in the WhatsApp about miss box outs.
Miss box outs, yeah.
Like fouls called on box outs.
Yeah, yeah. I think also too that's why we've changed our box out technique. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot that goes into the missed closeout that's a little bit more cerebral that we potentially need to have a talk about. Like maybe we've switched and that player hasn't recognized that they're a long closeout, you know, person and made a mistake in the moment. And obviously, you know, that's frustrating, but, you know, we can look at that. We can talk about it as a coach athlete as a team and so on, whereas a missed box out's a bit more black and white, I guess, in like it's just box out. Like the closest guy, like you have to do it.
Find a way.
Body first, ball second. Yep. Put a firearm on their chest, chin on inside shoulder, active hand. If you can't get to it, spike it away. Make sure we own the nail.
Yep. Jenny?
Yeah, definitely miss box out. I think close out, if your defensive structures are good enough that you scramble and you find a way in rotation to negate a potential score. Yeah, a box out for me, I'm a one and done. I just think giving up another opportunity for a reset on the shot clock, 14 second, or another opportunity so close to the rim, I'm a one and done type of person, and that's one of my pet peeves as a coach.
And I think it's the one thing that will probably punish you more often. Like, we see a missed box out, end up in an O-board, which is a putback straight away. And it's just so deflating. You could have defended really well for 22 seconds. You just get that one and it's like, oh, we've got to go for 14 more. No, only three more because they've scored on it straight away. Yeah. Whereas you can always recover from a missed closeout with a rotation, your scheme, whatever the case may be. So
we our under-20 Navy team, like Bessie spoken about on the pod, like the losses that we took at Nationals all came from second chance points.
Yep.
Like at the end of the day, that's what it was. So that's, it's always a tough pill to swallow, especially when we're talking about that it should be one of the controllables.
Yep. All right, Jenny, we're back on with you. Would you rather coach your child or have someone else coach your child?
I am not I will never coach that girl in my lifetime, ever. One, because she won't listen to me because she's my child, and I never did that to my parents. Not that my dad ever played the game. My mum did, but I told her to shut up. When I was 13, from the court, and she was up in the grandstand.
These adolescent years ago, you're coming thick and fast for Jenny.
And never said a word to me since, unless I engaged with her. But definitely will never coach Edie. Neil's probably got more chance of coaching her than I have. But it's not a space I want to be in. That's for other people. There's enough great coaches out there. And who's to say she's going to play basketball? She'll probably be chess, champion or something.
Did you coach her in chess? I've heard from a very good source you won a chess game when you were 11 years old.
Well, yeah, I'd love to play chess with her and beat her. But I'm never going – I don't want to coach my daughter unless she wants to engage. But in a team situation, no. Individually, maybe if she wants to. But that's her choice. I will never force that on her.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at in that if she wanted that to be a pastime for us to share and maybe go in the backyard and shoot and she's like, oh, can you help me with my shot or something like that? I mean, that just sounds wonderful. I'm thinking to the movie Father of the Bride, which is one of my guilty pleasures. But, yeah, like a team environment.
I did not think that would be one of your
movies. No, I did not see that coming, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I don't think I'm a Steve Martin type
I think you're a Steve Martin type. Yeah, no, no doubt. Like, I just see you playing the banjo now.
Yeah, but no, I'm the same. The team environment, I don't think that's the right place for her and I. But anyway, she's more interested in unicorns and princesses. Oh, and Lego. She's like obsessed with Lego. So
yeah, that's a little bit your world.
Yeah, like, yeah. A bit more nerdy, a bit more
design.
Yeah, design, exactly.
There's a big chance Coops is, oh, you've made a basketball court with your Lego. Yeah, how's that? Like, I see what you've done there. All right, would you rather an hour of shooting or an hour of S&C?
Oh, why did you even put this question in? Do you want me to answer for Coops?
You want me to answer for screen?
If you could, actually, actually. Why should it be shooting, Jenny?
I'm pretending I'm Coops here because shooting is the master skill and we should all value it. And if I had my way, that's all we would do. And, offense wins games and you've got to be able to find the bottom of the net and that's most definitely the only way that you can do that. So shooting for sure.
It's pretty good.
It's good.
Right. S&C?
Healthy body equals healthy mind. Mobility, injury reduction, strength, lateral quickness. This is the base that you need.
In order to shoot.
In order to shoot, in order to dribble, in order to do anything in our game. If you don't lay the foundation with S&C, you're not going to be able to be successful on the basketball court.
At least we listen to one another.
I was going to say, that's not too bad from both of you two. That's pretty impressive. All right, Coops. Go college or go pro?
When I was coming up, it was definitely college. I think that just was wrapped up in the pageantry of it all, and I'm now firmly GoPro. Caveat, caveat being, if you're not pursuing your education, so the advice I give a lot of athletes now is if you want to go to college, go A for the experience, because it is, it's a special experience. It's a really cool thing to go and do with your life, and B, go for the education. Like, you know, you could go potentially get a $400,000 education for free. But if you are that top 2%, if you are going to be that person, it's go pro. You know, you get to be in a professional environment, you get to practice every day, you get experts that are, you know, honing in on every part of, you know, every facet of your game. So yeah, if you're the top 2%, go pro. If you have the ability to go to college because of experience and education, go for it.
Jenny?
I'm definitely in the camp of if you can go pro. Okay, if I'm speaking for females, I think it's go pro if you're ready and able and can compete. But you reminding that it's not walk into a team and I start. It's you earn, you develop under playing against women and you work your way up in that category. It's not unless you're Laura Jackson was when she graduated from the COE back in 1999. There's rarely that she's once in a lifetime. So that's going to walk into a starting lineup. So for me, it's go pro and earn that way. The pageantry side of things in selling the college lures a lot of people, and it's just stuff, in my opinion. And I'm yet to see a player, and I'm happy to be called out here, I'm yet to see a player that's gone over and come back any better than any player that stayed and did NBL 1 or did Youth League or has gone into WNBL as a DP. So living over there and getting that, if you want the life, I'm with you, Coops, and that. And then for men, I'm a little bit more sold on going from a development of their bodies.
Agency, Coops.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's a great point. I totally agree. Like, I totally agree.
To allow an 18, 19-year-old to actually mature physiologically, spend time where we know in college they invest heavily into S&C and come back a man, to be able to compete with the men, I think is invaluable. You know, Neil was probably one of the only ones back in his time. He could have gone to Gonzaga but chose to stay, and he went and signed pro and went with the Perth Wildcats. But Neil's body now is exactly how it was when he was 18. So he
And we resent him every day.
I know, trust me, so do I. So yeah, I'm definitely go pro if you can. Yeah. I really am.
Yep. Yeah. No problems. All right, last couple of questions. Would you rather have a shooter that can't defend or a defender that can't shoot?
No, I'm not. I'm going to say I would rather someone that can defend and isn't a great shooter, because we've got four other people that can do it, even though they're probably going to step off them. But I recall Emily McInerney was actually a very, very good shooter, but made a career of not actually shooting the ball at all, and had a very successful career in the WNBL and also for Australia. So it's not that she couldn't shoot, she just chose not to, but I recall as one of the greats of our games. So I'm going to go with someone that can defend and not shoot.
Yep, Coops?
Just for the purpose of the game, of course, shooter who can't defend. But again, you know, there's all these important caveats that go with that. Like, I think you can potentially hide one, being that they're so impactful on the defensive end, and again, are probably bringing that same mindset around setting screens and moving and sharing the ball, that they're not going to impact you that much. I think if you get to a second person like that, the game now with the value of spacing and the three-point shot and free
throws.
That's
a really – it is actually – that's probably the hardest question you've asked.
Yeah.
It really is.
Shooting an S&C one?
No.
Yeah. No, I didn't think so.
I won that one.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a couple of layups in here occasionally. Coops. 10th pick of your team, would you rather take the project or pick the 10th best kid?
Project.
Yep.
Yeah. I just love the idea of sustainability. I love the idea of giving someone, you know, that experience that they may not get anywhere else, and what that could potentially do for their career. Knowing that rotations running 10 deep, you know, potentially aren't happening that often. And then, you know, knowing that player's coming back the next year, like with that experience, with that mindset, and being able to coach up the other guys. Hey, I've been there. This is what it's like. This is how hard we have to work. I think he's really valuable.
Yep. Jenny? We can give her time to think, and she's still puzzled and perplexed by this question.
Yeah, no. I love the project, and I'm all for the, as Ash would say, the green bananas.
Yeah.
If it's a...
Yeah, I'll give you the caveat if you want, like season versus tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, if it's a tournament, I'm taking the 10th best person.
Yep.
Not player.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because their role... Yeah. You need the person for that who's willing to, which would probably be the project, who's willing to sacrifice their own personal success for the great of the great opportunities of the team. So it'd be the 10th best person, not player.
Yep.
That's a great
season.
Point.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Jenny, we're on to you. Practice good shots or practice bad shots?
I practice good shots.
Yep. Coops?
Again, shout out to Ev Valance on this one, who's turned me around in the fact that if you have a good shot technique and you're a really good shot doctor of your own shot, practice bad shots, practice tough shots, practice sprinting to a spot so fast you almost fall over in terms of trying to, you know, fight for your feet and gather and raise up. If you are still... at that technique phase, then you need to be practicing good shots and making sure you get that feeling and understanding of what feet focus and follow through looks like, feels like, sounds like.
Yep.
So I will go with, I would say all of them are good shots. For me, a bad shot is the when the decision is to take the shot.
Okay, so it's more shot selection.
Yeah, sorry, okay. My bad.
Okay, okay. Yep, yep.
But yeah, because... Yeah, that's where I was thinking. Apologies for the people out there.
Yeah.
Because I think all of those scenarios are actually working on good shots. For me, it's the other ones, the shots over multiple people or falling backwards and, you know, out of, you know, those kind of shots.
If they're a good shooter and they take bad shots, are you okay? Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, we all have it with teams that we sit there and say, hey, yeah, they're our best shooter and that's a terrible shot, but our bad shooter has just taken that same shot. Am I going to deal with it the same way? Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, you end up in a little bit of a mess there. All right, I'll give you a little bit of a lead into this one. I'll give you a little bit of time to think because this is not the easiest question. So, effectively, it is name your dream Boomers or Opals coaching staff.
Oh.
Okay, so this was originally going to be head coach, assistant coach, front office, which is code for sacked. I won't do that to you. And I was going to give you the three names, but I thought, no, it's probably a little bit difficult. You may need to sack some very close personal friends of yours, and that would not be fair on anybody. So name your head coach and two assistants for Boomers or Opals that you would love to see. You can put yourself
in the future.
Yeah, in the future. You could also have it of past. Like if you want to bring back Lindsay, no worries. Like we're in the gauge room, so I figured it's only fair we give him a shout out. And Coops, we've already put one and set a like, spot aside on the bench for you.
Okay.
Like you're allowed to name yourself.
Head coach, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't anticipating assistant.
Head coach Gorge. Obviously, just what he's done for basketball in our country and for our community. And then I was just incredibly lucky to have him and Kev believe in me to be a development player / training fodder. Guy for a couple of years with the Titans, and that was just something I look back on very fondly, and he really impacted the way that I coach now. So I think that connection too probably does that. Assisting would be Dre. Again, just love the way he sees the game, his ability to coach the individual, and as a tactician, his innovation. Again, what he was able to do with our groups, I think warrants that spot. Yes, I would love to take the next spot, but I'll leave my ego at the door.
You put yourself as development coach.
Water boy.
Yeah, there you go. Excuse me.
Well, team manager, that is actually the hardest job. I'm not dissing them all because that is actually the hardest job going around.
Yeah, no, definitely. Maybe for the future. Michael Cassidy.
Yeah, okay.
Really like the steps that he's making overseas, the time that he put in at the Chute, sees the game really well. He's personable. The players engage with him. I think there's definitely room for him to take up one of those chairs in the future. Yeah, that'd be a fun staff to watch.
Yeah, like it. All right, Jen, what do you got for the Opals?
I can't decide. There's been too many good ones.
You get to the last question and it's like, yeah, now I don't want to have to make a decision.
I would like to see Shannon there in some capacity.
Yep.
I really think he has a great brain for the game. I'm not going to give you a head. I'm just going to give you three.
That's all right.
I think
Coop still put on board for you, so that's okay.
Sorry, yeah. I'm going to give you Shannon. I'm going to give you Christy Harawa. And I'm going to give you Tully Bevilacqua.
Timely.
Yeah. And they're all for different reasons.
Yep.
I think Tully is a good piece in terms of culture, trust. Like there's a certain hats I believe assistant coaches should wear, and that is a place where players can speak openly and occasionally have a vent without any repercussion. And I think she would be really excellent in that piece and dealing with pressure and stuff like that and keeping it real. Yep. And then Shannon and Christy, just for their minds of the game, I think they could really impart. Christy, obviously being, I believe, one of the best point guards that I've ever had the privilege of playing with, but she, the ability to make herself or others around her better and how she imparts that knowledge quite effortlessly. And then Shannon, because I'm intrigued by him.
Interesting. I like it. All right. Last couple of questions.
There's obviously so many amazing coaches that we have not been able to.
Oh, absolutely. And I could go Tom Maher. I could go Tom Maher, and he's a 5-time Olympian, and I could go Jan Sterling. There's so many. So many. But I'm talking future.
Yeah.
And where we're going. Yeah, that's potentially where I see it.
So please don't crucify us.
No.
That's why, it's hard.
You guys got this with 30 seconds notice. This is not like you put hours of planning into this thing. Like you had no choice. Last one for you, Coops. North Melbourne Magic, North Melbourne Giants, Southeast Melbourne Magic.
Giants, man. I was a Giants cheer squad member. I remember Friday nights. I used to wear my Giants cheer squad T-shirt and my New York Knicks shorts to primary school like every day.
With the chains?
Didn't have the chains then. Right. Yeah, I wasn't a gangster then. I was still pretty nerdy, but still rocked out. I got to wear my Reebok pumps one day to show them off.
Wow.
Yeah, that was one time. But Giants all the way. That was now being, I'll just name drop here, but being good mates with D-Mac and having coached with him and spend time with him away from the court, it just still blows my mind that I was like up in the stands of the glass house watching this guy play in absolute awe, and then now like get to, you know, share a laugh and help develop athletes with him. Like our sport is just so cool sometimes, like it really is. So love the Giants, very blessed to have some relationships that stem back to then.
Excellent. Where would you prefer to live and play, Jenny? Palmer or Adelaide?
Oh, Palmer. Yeah. Yeah. No.
I think it's Palmer.
And for anyone that doesn't know that's in Italy. but yeah, no, hands down. I would move back to Italy in a heartbeat. I love that place, love the country, love the food, love the culture, loved the basketball. And it's definitely not Southeast Melbourne Magic or North Melbourne Giants for me. Because I'm not Victorian, so I never supported them.
That's okay, as long as you can go to Italy, as long as Edie's citizenship remains in Australia, just in case she does want to start playing.
That's right.
And Neil's coaching, we're all good there. But, hey, look, thanks very much for both of you two. I know you jumped into this thing with very little understanding of what was coming your way, but you both took
flying
it on
blind.
Very well. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a little more of a battle, but anyway. Yeah.
You're a little more similar than you think.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Read into that what you will. It's, but no, seriously, though, thanks for both of you jumping in. It's always difficult putting your opinion out there on these sorts of things. And even just the, I've got to only choose one or the other and these are the parameters. It's not easy to do. So to be fair, you guys did very well in that. Like, Bestie and Zoe were the same. Like, they ummed and ahed over everything on the way through. So
you should actually have a shot clock. A stop clock. And just go, that's your time. That's all you got to answer.
Are you bringing chess back into this?
Sorry, yeah.
She genuinely is. Unbelievable. Coaches, that is us for this week, though. Thank you very much for jumping into the Talking Split podcast, and we will catch you all back next week. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.